Good morning, honorable members, and good morning, officials from the Department of Energy. I see that both the chairperson and the CEO of Nexa are here. The advisor to the minister and everybody who's present, members of the public, you're welcome. So this morning we're going to receive a briefing from the Department of Energy. On the nuclear bill program. Let's receive apologies and then I'll explain what we're going to do today and what's the nature of the presentation because it does appear to me that will require a follow-up presentation again soon after this one. So, Secretary, can we get apologies?
Thank you, Chair. The following apologies. Mr. Esther Reason requested to leave at 12 o'clock because he has an appointment at 12 o'clock, Chair. And then we also received an apology from the minister who is returning abroad, so she's unable to attend, as well as an apology from the deputy minister who is unable to attend the meeting. And then also we received an apology from the director general of the Department of Energy who fell ill, Chair, so he will be able to attend the meeting as well. Those are the apologies.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Can we please note the apologies? So we'll have to move straight to receive the presentation from DOE. I wanted to explain this, especially to the members of the public who are here. And I'm happy that you are here. There's been some speculation that you won't be here when the presentation is done. The honorable members of the committee had asked the Department of Energy to make available to the committee all the contracts they have signed in preparation for the procurement of nuclear energy, which was the preparatory phase. We sent a list to the Department of Energy to send us the documents, which we have since received. So we have been trying for some time now to make arrangements to get them to be presented here. So today, we're going to be presenting these contracts, some of them that were signed a few years ago, and the Department of Energy is going to be explaining what are these contracts that were signed in the preliminary phase up to now. You would remember that a while ago, we did bring intergovernmental agreements that were signed between the Republic of South Africa and a few other governments to the committee here for discussion. A week ago, The Minister of Energy made an announcement with regard to the publication of the IEP and the IRP. And I do know that arising out of the publication, so the issue of what's going to happen with the nuclear procurement has now become a matter of heightened interest. That's an issue that we're going to have to deal with at some point. That's why I was suggesting that as matters stand, it does appear to me that we may have to get back the Department of Energy here, NEXA and ESCOM, maybe the regulator, I see the CEO is here, to have some discussion about where exactly are we in the procurement program and what are the plans going forward. You would know that the last time we had a presentation here on nuclear, it was in the presence of ESCOM, and we were informed that a recommendation is being made to cabinet that will separate certain roles, in particular between ESCOM and NEXA. So subsequent to that, announcements have been made. So arising out of last week's announcement, I do think that it is hugely important that we get back the department, ESCOM and NEXA, to have a discussion on their plans for the build program. And I suppose that it is at that point that the questions that have arisen since last week about the future of the procurement program that would have to be dealt with. So I wanted to clarify that so that honorable members and members of the public who are here know that we're going to be dealing with the explanation of the contracts that had been signed with the Department of Energy, because that's an outstanding issue for the portfolio committee. Thank you very much. We will ask the Department of Energy. Unfortunately, both the Minister and the Deputy Minister are not here. As you have heard, the Director General is also not here. CFO, are you here to tell us how much it cost all of these contracts? Okay. Mr. Mbambo?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, members of the public, officials from the department, and the members of the state-owned entities, and all protocol observed. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson. As the Chairperson has indicated, we will take the committee through the work that has been done by the department over the last 5 years now in preparation for the rollout of the nuclear new build program, in the main to create the framework for the rolling out of the program to ensure that government's objective for the program can be achieved, to ensure that the government participate in the entire nuclear value chain for peaceful purposes in the nuclear build program. Chairperson, we made the introduction of the outline of the slides. We're making reference to the specific contracts or services that have been procured, and we make also reference to the different files wherein documents are contained. We will deal with the introduction. We will look into the comparative analysis of the shale gas to power versus the nuclear power. That was a contract that was executed for the department by KPMG. Then we'll look into the benchmark of the procurement framework. That's also a contract executed for the department by KPMG. We'll also deal with the cost of nuclear power. That contract was executed for the department by Ingerop. The owner, operator, and the financing structures was also executed by Ingerop for the department. The financing options, models, and solutions, that was executed by the Deloitte for the department. Then the deferred return on government investor approach, that contract was also executed by Deloitte on behalf of the department to provide that service. Then the economic impact of localization of nuclear new build program, that was undertaken by Ingerop. The feasibility study on the effective independence of the national nuclear regulator, that study was executed for the department by Nelson Gift Incorporated. The accession to one of the IEA liability conventions, that was executed by Nathan Gift Incorporated. The development of the training program of the first responders for the nuclear and radiological emergencies, that service was executed by the African Radiation Consultant on behalf of the department. The development of training material of the first responders for the nuclear and radiological emergencies, that contract was executed by Zimkile Consulting. The mechanisms to enforce implementation of the corrective actions by municipalities on nuclear emergency, that contract was executed by Nathan Gift Incorporated. A detailed financing model for radioactive waste management fund bill, that contract was executed by the University of Pretoria. The feasibility study on the withdrawal of safeguards function from NEXA, that contract was executed by Mzesi Energy Solutions on behalf of the department. The pre-procurement readiness assessment was undertaken by Masako Opasha Investment. The program management system was undertaken by the Central Lake Trading TA Empire Technology on behalf of the department. Chairperson, I think it's important to indicate the basis upon which the department has undertaken the work. As you know, the Cabinet approved the Nuclear Energy Policy for 2008, which guides the government's vision to become self-sufficient in all aspects of the nuclear new build program for peaceful uses. So this is a founding document around which all the work that government does for the nuclear new build is anchored. In addition, in 2011, the National Development Plan directed that the government to conduct thorough investigation on different aspects of the nuclear new build program before a procurement decision is taken. More specifically, the National Development Plan directed that South Africa needs a thorough investigation on arrangements regarding the safety, the implications of cost, the financing options, the environmental costs, and the benefits of the nuclear energy, the localization and industrialization, and the employment opportunities, and the uranium enrichment and the fabrication possibilities. To address the NDP, or the National Development Directives, the Department of Energy, in conjunction with other organs of state within the Energy Security Cabinet Subcommittee structures, has over the past 5 years procured various service providers to conduct investigations. The services or the feasibility studies were procured to create a framework for procurement and the rollout of the nuclear new build program. These investigations assisted the Energy Security Cabinet Subcommittee structures in developing the various strategies and policies. The rationale for commissioning the studies was also informed by the need to address the IAEA recommendations from the INIR mission, which is an Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review Mission, and the emergency preparedness review mission. As part of creation of a framework for the procurement and the rollout of the nuclear new build program, a need arose to procure additional experts, specialist services providers, as this is also will be discussed in the presentation. Next slide. With regards to the first study dealing with the benchmark, with regards to the first study that we commissioned through KPMG, that was a study on the comparative analysis of the shale gas to power versus the nuclear power in South Africa. What we found, perhaps I should deal with the purpose. The purpose was then to take a decision and provide an input into the national development plan with regards to whether the baseload should be provided through the shale gas or it should be provided through nuclear, in addition to coal that already provides the baseload. And what we found as a study is that the shale gas has the potential to become a game changer, though at present it's not sufficiently developed or economically mineable reserves are unproven, to be considered as a feasible contender in the planning process. Gas and nuclear options must be pursued to ensure that the diversification and the economic benefits are realized. And also what then the study indicated was that delaying the next baseload decision may have a severe impact on the security of supply. An undecision can potentially be the most costly outcome due to the broader economic impact. As a way forward, the study was then submitted to the National Planning Commission, as we've indicated, and it was also then used by the department as a basis to affirm the decision to continue with nuclear. And then we're providing the date of completion and the cost of the study. The study was then completed in March 2012, and it took 2 weeks with a cost of 340,000. The next study that we procure, or the contract that we entered into, was in relation to the study conducted by KPMG on the benchmark of the procurement framework. The purpose of the study was then to provide the department with a broader view on the possible contracting approaches based on those pursued by other countries in their nuclear new build program. This will be used to derive the lessons learned to be incorporated in the South African procurement approach that we adopted. As a basis, what the study then came out with as a conclusion was that when deciding on a procurement approach, it is important to consider the end game, or consider the sector aspirations and the broader national aspirations and the imperatives, the objectives and the role of the key stakeholders, and how these can be balanced in the program going forward with the procurement. In terms of the way forward of this service or the study, the end-in-mind procurement approach was then adopted by the National Nuclear Executive Coordination Committee in 2013 October. Basically, what the approach is that the government would be procuring a program and not an individual project within the program. That in the main, to ensure that government can realize its strategic goals to participate in the entire nuclear value chain. In that manner also then, based on that input, the department was designated as the procuring agent for the nuclear new build program because of its policy oversight and coordinating all the relevant aspects on the energy matters. In addition, then what the department and the interdepartmental stakeholders did was that we undertook a study tour to the prospective vendor countries in 2013-2014. We signed intergovernmental agreements with prospective vendor countries. Then came 2016, then a decision was made to delineate specific roles for the execution of the program. In this regard, the ESCOM was then endorsed by Cabinet as the owner and the operator and the procurer of the nuclear power plants in line with the nuclear energy policy for 2008. NECSA was then endorsed by the Cabinet as the owner and the operator of the nuclear fuel facilities, as well as the multi-purpose reactor, as well as the procurer of these infrastructural assets. The Department of Energy was then affirmed as the policy setting department, as well as the coordinating department for the nuclear new build program. So as we stand today, those roles have been clearly delineated. And in terms of the timelines that these services took place, it was conducted in May 2013. It was a four-week study at a cost of 907,000. The next contract that was entered into was entered with the Ingerop to conduct for the department the cost of nuclear power. The purpose of conducting that study was to provide the department with an update on the cost of nuclear power since the release of the IRP 2010-2030. There was a need that, given that the IRP had long been released, there is a need to make sure that we could assess and get an update on the cost of nuclear, and hence we commissioned that study. The output of this study was that the study provided a comparison of the main sources of data for the IRP input that was previously used, that had previously used the Electric Power Research Institute, ABRI data, which was Western inclined. The study average capital cost was around $4,918 per kilowatt. What also the study indicated was that the fleet approach has a positive cost effect, because if you executing a fleet of reactors other than one reactor, these lessons learned that you pick up in the program, and as you go from one unit to the next, there's an improvement in terms of the efficiencies, in terms of the cost, in terms of the schedule. So that's what the study indicated. I mean, the study indicated you get efficiencies of the learning curve up to 30% reduction in terms of cost. And there's a way forward. We recommended that the cost data that was derived out of this study be used in the update of the IRP as an input. And indeed, we've provided this input into the current update of the IRP. The values from the cost studies were also used as a basis for input into the financing models, options and solution study, and the economic impact of localization that we've already indicated, and we're going to deal with them in the presentation. This study also then informed the decision of the need to procure a fleet of 9.6 gigawatts of nuclear power to benefit from the cost reduction and the economic benefits. As regards to the dates of completion, the study was completed in October 2013, and it was a four-week study to a cost of $1 million, of just over $1 million. The next contract was then entered with Ingerop with a view to conduct the owner, operator, and the financing structures services for the department. The main purpose was to, for the department to be in a position to identify and establish the appropriate owner, operator, and the financing structure to source the required capital at both a project and a program level for the nuclear power plant project, from a single power station up to a complete nuclear fleet, taking into account the nuclear energy policy prescripts. What the study showed in terms of the output was that Eskom business as usual, if we talk about Eskom business as usual, we talk when Eskom is the 100% owner of the program and the program is financed through its balance sheet, can be associated with close partnership arrangements from technology and skills transfer to localization, which may be further enhanced by a minority ownership stake to a strategic partner. So there are various options that the owner-operator can be structured in line with the nuclear energy policy. The study also then indicated that the South African nuclear joint venture, SANJEF, scenario, although more attractive than the traditional BOOT, which is a build, own, operate, and transfer joint scenario, is also more risky, since the carving out of Quebec might be quite complex, both from a political and a financing point of view. So various options were explored as to how the program can be optimally financed, either with having Quebec as the asset of the state, either with having Eskom having a joint venture in the program. And all of this then assisted us in moving forward with the program. In terms of the way forward, the financial details for the options of Quebec transfer, the study noted that required more in-depth study, including the financial model, as well as access to Eskom financials, for which the Nuclear Energy Technical Committee gave approval. And in that regard, the study known as the Nuclear Finance Models, Options and Solutions was then conducted, and we are indicating the cost of the study and the period within which it was conducted, 6 weeks, and conducted at the cost of just over 3.5 million rand. As we've indicated, the financing option study was then conducted. We've entered into the contract with Deloitte. The purpose of that study was then to identify and establish the optimum financing structure scenario for the nuclear new build program. And these are the scenarios that the studies looked into and came up with in the various permutations with regards to what each one of them would entail. If you look into the business as usual, we've already discussed that one. Then there was a joint venture option with a 51% Eskom ownership, and the special purpose vehicle with Quebec and 51% Eskom ownership. And in terms of the key assumptions that were used by the service provider, they look into the multi-year price determination, regulated tariff, and they set in the first scenario that will be corporate financing with 10% of debt financing from the local debt and the ECA's, the export credit agents backed foreign debt. And in respect to that, in terms of what the output indicated, they indicated the levelized tariff for Eskom would be about 90 cents per kilowatt. And this, if you look into the tariff over a 30-year period, there will be no tariff because there will be no equity injection. That's all financed through the Eskom balance sheet. And it provides them what the South African investment could be and the gearing as well. On the next scenario, the joint venture with Eskom owning 51% of the assets, then these details provided regarding what the tariff details are, as well as the levelized tariff. I won't bore you with the details of all the scenarios you can read. Let me just then focus on the way forward, what then the recommendations were. The joint recommendation report was then drafted based on the input and the recommendation of the study. A team was established between the Department of Energy and the National Treasury. We then drafted a draft funding model, which was then submitted to Cabinet as a recommendation. Having looked into all of this, we realized that all the models have been conducted, everything from the cost of nuclear, the financing model, the economic impact of localization, and all of this required that in order to get a credible cost information, then there is a need to go out to the market, to test the market, so that you can validate the baseline or the benchmark information that you've got. Well, then Cabinet resolved that we test the market, and that's a process that the department and the key stakeholders, ESCOM and NEXA, are now embarking upon of preparing the request for proposal, which will be issued to the market. In terms of the cost, the study cost well over $4 million, and it was then completed within the duration of 3 months. It was undertaken in September 2014. The next contract was then entered into by the department with also Deloitte. This contract was then helped to deal with the deferral of the returns on government investor approach. And it is important that we highlight to the committee the logic behind conducting this study. The first study on the financing was looking into what are the possible scenarios of the owner-operator. The next one was then looking into how best can you finance this owner-operator, different options, and then the next one was then looking into what the possible scenarios regarding the tariff, what would be the levelized tariff, and all of this. And the next one was then saying, having gathered all this information, how best can you then look into the different scenarios of how you can manage the tariff? And that was the reason then to conduct this next study. In the main, the purpose was that for the Department of Energy to be in a position to identify and establish the impact of deferring the short-term government or strategic investor return on investment on the tariff and the overall return to the investor over the lifetime of the power plant. In terms of the outcome of the study was that the deferral of the government dividend during the power purchase agreement period may be effective way to reduce the impact of new nuclear build on the country's tariff. A lower government rate, as an example, 3.5% real terms versus the 8.2 nominal, would allow the post power purchase agreement tariff to be more in line with the power purchase tariff. As a way forward, this study would then be used going forward to assist with justifying the need to reduce the government return on investment in order to reduce the tariff if necessary. And this is one of the studies that we will be taking forward as we are still busy at developing policy and the framework for the program. In terms of the cost of the study cost $995,333, and it was conducted for 4 weeks, and it was conducted in February 2015. The next contract, honorable members, was then entered with Ingerop, with the department, for Ingerop to conduct the economic impact of localization of the nuclear new build program. The purpose was to assess the economic impact of localizing the nuclear new build program. On completion of the study, the department would be in a position to identify and establish the role of nuclear localization as a socio-economic development driver, amongst others. As a key output of the study, then the study indicated that new manufacturing capacity should also consider non-nuclear markets, not only focusing on the nuclear components. A specific market analysis needed to be done with the manufacturers if heavy equipment localization is decided as the approach that government would want to implement going forward. We need to get agreement with the prospective vendors so that the local manufacturers are incorporated in the value chain of the prospective bidders. Next slide. In terms of the output of this study, is that the study recommended that we localize easy technology for Unit 5, which comprises of the upper part and the assembly of the steam generators, the main coolant line, the pressurizer, and we have to localize the reactor pressure vessels and the lower parts of the steam generator, the turbine generator for Unit 6. The study also recommended that the localization needs to achieve more than 80% target. And I think this is important to contextualize for the committee. The main premise of the nuclear new build is to make sure that South Africa can industrialize through nuclear as part of the value chain in the energy mix or one of the energy mix sources. And government is not only looking for the nuclear new build to generate electricity. It's looking to expand the manufacturing capability of the country, and hence the recommendation came as such in the study. One of the issues is that industry, owner, governmental agencies, upfront fuel cycles needs to be engaged with. All vendors own the fuel manufacturing technologies, but there were few of the prospective vendors that have the technologies for the mining, conversion, enrichment, in the case other partners should be involved. Partnership with the foreign suppliers would also be a critical aspect if the indicated localization has to be achieved for the program. The architect-engineer capability to be developed in South Africa with the support of established nuclear architect engineers. So that's a very important capability. Government is looking to participate in the entire value chain, starting from the mining right to the management of the back end of the nuclear fuel cycle. This is why then the program is much the program as it is. Then as part of the way forward, then the study to be determined under the Energy Security Cabinet subcommittee. This study will be used as an input into the work that the department and the intergovernmental structures of the energy security are conducting to lay the framework. In terms of the cost, the study cost way just about above 6 million. And it was completed in March 2015, and it took 6 months for the study to be completed by Engeron. Next slide. In terms of the next contract that was entered into, it was entered with Nathan Gift Incorporated for conducting the feasibility study on the effective independence of the National Nuclear Regulator. The purpose of or the objective of the study was then to address the independence of the NNR based on the IAEA Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review, which is the INIR mission recommendations. The outcome of the study was that needs to be a consideration of the effective separation of the regulator from the Ministry of Energy and considered the migration to a department that's not promoting the nuclear energy. In terms of the, also the recommendation was that the funding cost recovery model be adopted by South Africa, and also the enforcement of the civil monetary fine system be adopted. As a way forward is that the study is still under consideration in the department and also in the energy security structures to provide final motivation of how the matter of the regulatory effective independent is handled in the NNR legislation. The study was completed in October 2013. It was done in a matter of one month, and it cost 496,906. The next contract was then entered also with Nathan Gift Ntlapo Incorporated that dealt with providing the service on the extension to one of the IEA liability conventions. The purpose of the study was to perform a risk assessment associated with the premiums payable by each of the contracting parties for the Convention on the Supplementary Compensation, the CSC, and the Vienna Convention. The outcome of the study, the salient requirements for accession or ratification of a nuclear liability convention are as follows. Is that one, the national legislation needs to be aligned with the elected nuclear convention that the country aspires to ratify. We need to have a compensation scheme for the nuclear damage in the national legislation also addressed. The elected convention needs to be approved by the National Assembly, the National Council of Province, in terms of the Section 231, subsection 2 of the Constitution, and it needs to be debated in Parliament. So that's a process that's still unfolding. We've done work, and we've now got these recommendations, and they are assisting government in terms of developing policy on certain aspects of the program. In terms of the way forward, then consultation is still underway with the key stakeholders to then decide which will be the appropriate convention with due consideration to risk that South Africa needs to accede to. The study was completed in October 2013. It was undertaken for 1 month, and it cost the amount as indicated. Next slide. The next contract, honorable members and the chairperson, was then entered with the African Radiation Consultant that was for the development of the training program for the first responders. The purpose of the study was to develop a training program of the first responders for the nuclear and the radiological emergencies in order to address the recommendations of the IAEA IPREF mission or IPREF report. The outcome of the study was that we need to legislate a requirement for training of the nuclear and radiological emergency planning preparedness and response personnel, including the first responders, and to provide a national training infrastructure. In other words, there's a need for the country to review the existing legislation in order to accommodate this particular requirement. We need to introduce a uniform national training curricula for the training of nuclear and radiological emergency planning preparedness and response, including the first responder. There is a need to implement the national training program and to establish or designate a national training center to provide national training. As a way forward, the review of the NNR Amendment Act is currently undertaken by the department in order to enforce the requirements for the training of the nuclear and the radiological emergency functionaries. And there is also a need then to amend the responding plans and the standard operating procedures. Next slide. The next contract was entered by the department with Zimkile Consulting to provide a service for the development of training material of first responders for the nuclear and radiological emergencies. And the main thrust or the purpose of this study was then to develop the training material for the nuclear and radiological emergency for the first responders. And in terms of the outcome of the study or the output of the study was the training material for the nuclear and radiological emergency first responders, the training for the nuclear and radiological emergency first responders was then conducted a 5-day pilot project. In terms of the way forward, the accreditation of the developed training material will be undertaken. The national training of all the identified emergency first responders, the inclusion of the proposed IAEA capacity building center. And this study was completed in 5 weeks with a cost of 469,114 rand, and it was done in October 2016. The next contract was entered with Northern Gift Nzapo Incorporated to provide the services on the mechanisms to enforce the implementation of the corrective actions by municipalities on nuclear emergencies. The main purpose of the study was then to develop a mechanism that will allow for enforcement of the implementation of the corrective actions on the nuclear emergency preparedness and response. And in terms of the outcome or the output of the study, we'll have to amend. It recommends to amend the relevant sections of the National Nuclear Regulatory Act to provide legislative authority for the NNR to exercise direct regulatory authority over the national, provincial, and municipal authorities. With regards to the nuclear emergency preparedness and response matters, and also then to provide the NNR will then direct the legislative, will have the direct legislative powers to issue corrective measures and enforce these measures against national, provincial, and municipal authorities. As a way forward, the study then indicated the department needs to consult with other stakeholders, in particular the Disaster Management Authority, on the review and the amendment of the NNR Act, and to find concurrence on how Section 38 of the NNR Act can be enforced by the NNR over the national, provincial, and municipal authority. Next slide. The next contract, honorable members, was then entered with the University of Pretoria to conduct a detailed financing model for the radioactive waste management fund bill. The main purpose was to develop a financial model that will assist the department to more accurately estimate the tariffs from nuclear waste generators for the nuclear waste disposal. In terms of the output or the outcome of the study, the proposed radioactive waste management fund bill needs to be structured as a separate independent fund within the national waste management system. The next is that the radioactive waste management fund bill is using levies as the mechanisms to accumulate waste generator contributions for the future siting, construction, operation, maintenance, and the decommissioning of the facilities of the back end of the nuclear fuel cycle. The detailed costing studies will be performed by the National Radioactive Waste Disposal Institute in collaboration with the waste generator and coordinated by the Radioactive Waste Management Fund Bill. In terms of the way forward, is that as a department, we are analyzing the recommendations of the study so that we can make the recommendations to the Director General and the Minister for approval of the study, and then finalize it in terms of consultation with the stakeholders. In terms of the cost, the study was then cost about 1.3 million, and it was completed in October this year. It was undertaken over a period of 3 months. The next contract, honorable members and the chairperson, was that the contract entered with Mzesi Energy Solutions to conduct the feasibility of the withdrawal of the safeguard function from Nexa. The purpose of the study was to determine an appropriate location of the national safeguard function with the objective of ensuring independence of the function and maintaining its integrity and confidence in terms of compliance with the international obligations and the national obligations for that matter. In terms of the output, the study was finalized now in October and is still undergoing internal review with a view to then make recommendations to the Minister and the Director General on the way forward as to where the possible location of the safeguards will be. The study has just been completed and that's the cost as indicated. Next one. The next contract, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable members, was entered by the department with Mahlako Apatla Investment to conduct the pre-procurement readiness assessment. The purpose was then to conduct an independent assessment of the department's state of readiness for the procurement for the nuclear new build of the country and to provide the requisite technical expertise for the department to ensure a clear, accurate, legally compliant request for proposal and the procurement process for the program. With regards to what the study undertook, the service provider conducted the pre-procurement readiness assessment, which included the following: reviewing the procurement strategy and preparing a compliance report, reviewing the pre-procurement activities and preparing a compliance report, reviewing the request for proposal and preparing a report in that regard, and also then effecting required changes to the draft RFP, and then also then dealing with preparing the legislative exemption that will be required for the program. In terms of the output of this study, the procurement strategy then indicated the specific gaps that were then needed to be addressed and activities needed to be undertaken before the issuance of the RFP and post-issuance of the RFP activities. With regards to the procurement activities, then the report identified the legislative requirements that were in place and that are in place and the findings, and also made observation in the activities that have been undertaken by the department in relationship to each of the pre-procurement activities. With regards to the draft request for proposal, the request for proposal should be structured in a manner to ensure a prompt and a seamless procurement process which complies with the constitutional imperatives of fairness, equitability, and transparency, and competitive and cost-effective. In terms of the cost, then the study cost just above 20 million, and it was completed in August this year. It was conducted over a period of 3 months. The next contract, honorable members and the chairperson, was the contract entered with Central Lake Trading, TA Empire Technology, to provide a service on the program management system. And the intended outcome of this service is to provide the department with the ability to effectively and efficiently administer the program management, and including the procurement, the project tracking, the governance, the compliance, and information management for the nuclear new build program. And also it's important to highlight that the service also then will then provide a secured environment for the nuclear new build information. Some of the attributes of the service is that it then provides the e-procurement and invoice tracking, annual performance planning and management, file and content management, contract management, business intelligence and real-time reporting and supporting services. In terms of the period, the service is undergoing. It will complete in 2017 December. It's for the period of 2 years, and this service is still in progress, and the cost of 171 million. Next slide. Just as a concluding remark, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members, we believe as a department it's quite important for the committee members to be briefed on this work and to also then get an appreciation of the extensive nature of the work that is required when you are planning to execute the nuclear new build program. You need to make sure that you've created a framework that addresses the various components of the nuclear program and as directed by the Nuclear Energy Policy of 2008, that government wants to be self-sufficient through the rollout of the nuclear new build to stimulate industry in South Africa. The department has undertaken this work in collaboration with state-owned entities and other interdepartmental in a much more collaborative manner to make sure that we derive the expertise that is existing in the country to make sure that the work that is done has been done and the studies have been done through the work, the terms of reference that comes from the team, and also independent studies that have been commissioned, inviting the IEA, and when we receive their reports and their recommendation, we are then in a position to commission certain studies to make sure that we address those recommendations. And also then, having done this work, we are directed by the National Development Plan, which specifically directed the government to undertake a thorough investigation on a number of key elements of the nuclear new build to make sure that when a procurement decision is taken, it is taken informed by a thorough investigation and thorough technical recommendation that support the decision-making. And that's the manner in which this detailed work that we have presented here to the committee has been conducted. And key to indicate to the committee is that this particular work is a pre-procurement work. The government has not yet started the procurement of the nuclear new build. The 9.6 gigawatts that we're talking about has not started the procurement, but it is all done in preparation to make sure that when the procurement decision is then undertaken, the basis has been created, there's a strong technical foundation which informs the government decision making in the process. I'd like to thank you, Chairperson and the Honourable Members.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Mbambo, for the presentation. We'll now move to the questions by honorable members. Mr. Mbambo, just before I give over to the honorable members, I just want to understand. What's happening with the report, the financing options report that you drafted with National Treasury? Where's that report? And the reason I'm asking is that last year, when we going through these discussions. We had delayed public hearings on the basis that we're waiting for you and National Treasury to finish that work, following what the minister explained to us. So is that report ready? Can you please answer that before I allow the honourable members to ask their questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. That report was drafted for the Energy Security Cabinet Subcommittee, and it was used as an input to making the recommendation to inform the Cabinet decision on moving forward to then test the market.
So the report is available?
The report is available for the committee.
Okay. Honourable members, it's your turn. Let's see. Honourable Makai, you only have one hand. Oh, Honourable Estes, I had warned you to sit beside. Honourable Matlala, Mabunda, Mahambesa. Honourable Makai?
Thanks, Chair. thanks to the Department for the presentation. Chair, I'd like to start with a broad understanding of the procurement process followed in anticipation of procuring these various contracts and services. I'd like to have confirmation from Mr. Mbombo that what procurement process was followed internally. Do we have copies of the procurement notices that were issued? Are the minutes available for the internal department's bid committee to determine the allocation of these awards? And can they please be made available to the committee? Chair, I raised specific concern in regard to three of the awarded contracts. We'll note that Zimkile Consulting, for example, Chairman, doesn't even have a functional website, which is a strange thing when you're a consulting firm charging 469,000 Rand for five weeks worth of work. So it's impossible to assess whether this consulting firm actually has the requisite skill set to undertake the work that was allocated to it by the department. Chair, I also want to note that Nathan Gifted Klapo, although very well regarded in his field, was, however, also the in-house counsel for the National Nuclear Regulator for 7 years, from 2004 until 2011, and therefore allocating him projects to assess the NNR might smack of a conflict of interest. So it's interesting that the department awarded several contracts amounting to almost 2 million rand to an individual who was previously the legal counsel of the National Nuclear Regulator. This raises red flags. I'm not impugning Mr. Nkapo's dignity, but it would strike me and be very interesting to see what the rationale from the department was in allocating work when it was specifically asking Mr. Nkapo to assess the independence of the NNR in terms of the findings of the Integrated Nuclear Infrastructure Review Report. So a little bit interesting that we're using those sorts of individuals. Finally, Chair, obviously the big contract that's been in the media is for the 171 million rand by Central Lake Trading. A very strange procurement for a management system when the department is no longer the procuring agent for nuclear. So we'd want to understand why the department made this procurement. Actually, the date of the procurement, strangely enough, is not added here with where all the others are. So 171 million rand was spent when the department was busy handing off the procurement of nuclear to Eskom. And Chair, what's really odd here is that the department didn't issue its own tender. It actually piggybacked on a tender that was issued in the Free State. Now, I'm not sure what the Free State government, provincial government, is issuing tenders on energy. Energy is a national competence. The department has yet to make any information available as to, one, why they didn't issue their own procurement notice, two, why they adopted a procurement notice of the Free State government. Three, what was the entity of the Free State government that issued this procurement notice? What was the procurement notice for? How was the department able to piggyback on the back of another procurement notice for a provincial government entity to essentially make what is a national decision of procuring a nuclear system management system for 171 million rand. I'm connected to the family of Vivian Reddy, who, as we know, is a close friend of the president. So if the department can clarify some of the questions we have around that, would be deeply helpful, Chair. Also, Chair, in their own comments to the media, they indicated that this was a deviation from their normal procurement processes. Could they explain how they justified this deviation? Also, considering, Chair, that the department has yet to finalise the government's framework for the nuclear procurement process, i.e. the relationship between NECSA, Eskom and the department in terms of who's going to do what in the nuclear procurement process, it seems strange that they would have made a procurement of this size as late as August this year. So those are the questions I have around procurement, Chair. I'd also like just to clarify that the Director General and all of the DDGs have submitted their declarations as are required to the Public Service Commission, and that those be made available, Chair, to the committee for evaluation, considering that there are rumours that some of the procurement might have been related to shareholding or possible directorships within companies. So would the DDG please confirm that he himself has no direct interest in any of the companies that were associated with procurement, and that all DDGs and DDGs of the department have fulfilled within the last 5 years that all of these were allocated their own declarations to the Public Services Commission. So that's on the questions of procurement, Chair. Dealing with the actual report, Chair, I have a few questions specifically around the assessment of shale. Chair, this assessment was done, from what I understand, in 2012. From what we understand, obviously there's been issues around the GUMP not being finalised. It seems now, Chair, that the GUMP has not been finalised and further work on shale has not been undertaken, purposely so the department has to push a harder line on nuclear for baseload. So the fact of the matter is, Chair, from what we understand, the reserves have not been established. We are not aware what's down there. No exploration has been undertaken. It's currently being tied up between the GUMP and the MPDRA, and yet the department is providing us with a report from KPMG which is categorically stating that we need to go nuclear when we don't even have a clear understanding of what gas infrastructure or gas reserves we have and what the initial cost of gas infrastructure will be. You will note, Chair, that, for example, a McKinsey study done at the end of last year clearly indicated that gas extraction could start taking place with as little investment as about 4 billion rand into the gas market for importation and subsoil supply gas as a viable alternative for baseload. So, Chair, it's very strange that we have a report from KPMG that assesses and finds in favour of nuclear, reaffirms nuclear, when we don't even understand the full extent of what gas reserves you might very well have and how to utilise and unlock those. Chair, again, the study done by Inga Ropp on the cost of nuclear power, they're finding of $4,918 per kilowatt. Chair, there's not a single other study in the world that verifies that amount of money for building nuclear. Possibly the only place where that kind of nuclear is being built is in China, where there are vastly different labour laws, very vastly different endowments, vastly different efficiencies in terms of labour productivity. And therefore, Chair, to just, you know, to kind of just go, well, the EPRI study's Western. EPRI's considered, Chair, as one of the globally respected non-governmental, non-for-profit research institutions that provides clear assessment on nuclear, which in its latest report said that 98% of nuclear power stations have cost overruns averaging between 128 and 156%, Chair, which means you buy one, you pay for two. So the blatant disregard of what is the international standard to go with a local finding in favour of nuclear at a certain cost, Chair, which cannot be substantiated by any global norm other than Inga Prop's own study, smacks me, Chair, very, very suspect. So the department is paying a consultancy to come up with a certain figure that is somewhat aligned to the NDP that can't be substantiated internationally by other international data. So, Chair, I must say we'd like to see more detail around that and much more explanation around exactly how they get to this figure, because everyone is aware that nuclear costs, there's massive nuclear cost overruns associated with nuclear new build programs, and this cost definitely does not look reflective of that at all, Chair. Chair, as you've already alluded to, in terms of the financing options, we would like to see more detail. What's presented, Chair, is not useful or sufficient. We would obviously like to see National Treasury's response to these financing options and models. We were led to believe that Treasury had a different finding, a different understanding, and therefore, Chair, we would very much like to see what Treasury's response was. Presenting us with a report from Deloitte that has not been reflected upon by Treasury is not helpful And then also, I mean, the chair again, 90% per kilowatt hour for electricity. I mean, chair, there's no single expert in this country who puts it at less than 1.10 rand. So again, these figures don't seem to add up of what is general practice and experience globally. And again, we seem to be tweaking and massaging the numbers to come up with numbers that seem to favor nuclear. And chair, we need to be able to evaluate that and benchmark that with the National Treasury saying, what experts say, and not simply what a single report says in favor of nuclear paid for by the department. So chair, if we can please also insist that we get Treasury's response. If we need to, we need to get Treasury officials out to this committee to explain their interpretation of the financing models, what they themselves have found and what their own assessment was. Chair, we have been led to believe that National Treasury has had a very different understanding and finding in relation to those things. Chair, I think those are my main points. I'll come around for the second, on the second bite. Thank you.
The list of gotten the list. Okay, so just as we continue, just need to clarify. The reason I asked that question was just to determine when is it possible to do what we promised we will do last year with regard to public hearings. And because we do believe that we should have an open and frank debate with South Africans on this matter. And one of those is to listen to National Treasury. So we'll call everybody. There are views. Those who are pro-nuclear, those who are opposed to nuclear, they should come to Parliament and we can have an open discussion as South Africans about this question. So we will do that. So we will at some point. I didn't ask him about the study by the analysis done by National Treasury because we'll have to ask them directly to provide that. So I don't know if they have it. So we'll attend to that. But I just wanted to clarify that our intention is, after looking at these contracts now, we have got to return to a discussion partly necessitated by last week's events, that we have got to have a new conversation publicly on this matter. So we will do that. So I'm sure at some point National Treasury will come here and tell us what they think. Honorable Esteza.
Thank you, Chair. Well, I'm glad on shale gas, the department seems to have come to the census. Shale gas is just an expense of about 100 million rand for each well, 19 million liters of water also for each well, which we just cannot afford in this country. Also on page 4, I see we spent 1 million rand, and it was just mentioned that by one of the members also. This figure just doesn't make sense to me, Chair. You know, we must not compare the relative cheapness of Kubert that supplies energy now at 45 cents or I think 43 cents a kilowatt hour. That was built in 1985, if I'm not mistaken, to cost now. A new project will never or can never come in under 120, maybe under 115 cents per kilowatt hour. So it's impossible. And where does figures come from for 90 cents per kilowatt hour, megawatt hour, at 1,000 kilowatt hour? It just doesn't make sense. Eskom has been battling with cost overruns with their two coal power stations for how long, Medupi and Kusuli, and the government is talking now to plug this significant revenue shortfall as far back as 2012, and at most recent applications, nuclear expansion, we just cannot afford it in this country, except if there's a massive tariff hike brought into play again, which the ratepayers just cannot afford. They're already too much cash trapped in this country.
I've also made a few notes there. Chair, the real world Eskom should be a major contributor rather to the fiscus, rather, and maybe this is too strong words, than a leech that's currently sucking the lifeblood of this this country. Insignificant demand and costly supply means nuclear possesses a threat to the future stability of the country's public finances and economic growth, which is a fact. We've given actually, Eskom holds, in the beginning of this year, Eskom held 350 billion rands worth of guarantees. They were giving 23 billion rand, and we've written off 60 billion rand already. And now to draw Eskom is just by S&T has been downgraded. To borrow money now, you can just imagine, I don't even have to spell that out. And also this, the presenter said that a very thorough investigation was done. Really, this is over 200 million rand worth of investigation was done. I've seen on some of this, Mashlaku Apala, theirs was 20 million rand. I wonder what happened to them. Bought their Bentleys and moved on. And the very next one, 171 million rand for that investigation. A few islands for them. Thank you, Jay.
Okay. Thanks. With regard to the questions relating to specifically to Eskom, I did indicated at the beginning that we would like soon to have Eskom back on the status of the procurement process post the new designations. So some of those questions we can pose to Eskom itself when they are here. Honorable Matlala?
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. Mine relates to the appointed companies as to whether before the appointment did you check with them as to whether they comply with the policies of this country, in particular the historically disadvantaged South Africans, those who in fact in particular who have skills. Did you check these companies as to whether do they comply with these policies of this country? Did you also check the... Because you want to empower young people of this country. They are roaming on the street, they have all the skills that one will never ask. Did you also consider as to whether these companies, do they have young people with skills? I'm not referring to people, just appoint people to entice the committee or the South African population that you have yes address the issue of young people. And yet indeed these people you might find they are just window dressing. Within this department, within the companies that we are talking about here, you might find there are some sharks. The sleeping sharks, and you put our people there to say this question is being addressed, yet there are some sharks within those companies that are milking the state every day. Did you check as to whether these companies today comply with the policies of this country? The other one, Chair, relates to pattern we check. There is a statement on page 7 and Jarob bullet after the output of the study, bullet number 2. It says, can you unpack this bullet number 2? Because in my own view it confuses me. I don't understand it correctly, so can you unpack it so that even a man on the street can understand what you mean by this bullet number 2. The other one you made mention at in Jarob 2, page 6, bullet number 1, on way forward. You said that some of the studies were limited. Why is this different to other studies that you undertook? The other one, Chair, relates to these companies. Are these companies locally based? Are the South African companies, or you are outsourcing companies out of this country? Some England companies doing the work of the South African people. Are these companies locally based? I'm still putting my things in order, Chair. You'll forgive me. No, I think for now, Chair, we'll come at a certain round. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Honourable Mabunda.
Thanks, Chair. Good morning, Chair, and fellow members of Parliament. Mine relates to page 6 also, slide number 4, output of the study, breakpoint number 1. I will only read at the end, which says, data which was Western view only. Is it a Western view referring to Western countries, Western school of thought? What is it that all about? Number two, Chair. It refers to page, I think it's page 11. That deals with NGO economic impact. Mr. Mbambo, in his presentation, unless if I misrepresent his presentation, he said nuclear is not built for electricity generation, but for industrialization of manufacturing sectors. Can you elaborate it a bit so that we are able to make a differentiation as to what actually nuclear build is for, if not for electricity? At least you give an example of another source of energy that cannot deal with what the nuclear build can do. Two last questions, Chair. Are all the service providers paid in time? I think it's very important as well. And also, have all the service providers completed the tasks given? Because sometimes the government is pulled a leg back to say, but the commission has been done for the project that does not exist. We want to know as to whether they have completed or not. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mabunda. I suppose you mean 30 days.
Yeah.
I remember the debate in the House for 30 days. Honourable Member Sala.
Thank you, Chairperson.
country, I'm partly covered by the comrades from the organization I represent in the committee. However, I will raise issues which they could not raise. Chair, the presentation is very informative. Let me welcome it first before I raise my issues on it. On slide 3, all the aspirations and directives by the NDP are put nicely there, and I appreciate that. But you have omitted one directive from the NDP, which is the creation of jobs for South Africans. Now, I want you to explain to us today as to how is this program going to benefit South Africans, because it is not reflecting on the presentation that you've just made. I don't know whether your studies focused mainly on the processes of the procurement, and how have you omitted that important aspect of the study, because we really need to understand how South Africans are going to benefit on this entire nuclear belt program, because ours is about the people, not what the markets are going to be benefiting, because you are not the representatives of the markets. We have less interest on that. Chair, slide 5 of the report is a bit confusing for me. On the way forward, the presentation says Department of Energy designated the procurement agency for nuclear program. Can you unpack who are those designated procurement agencies, or who or what, in terms of the nuclear, because the sentence is very vague. So I don't want to live here with assumptions, because assumptions can be misleading. Chair, I also want to make a point that KPMG is one of the internationally reputable and recognized companies. I remember when we went on a study tour in Germany, we saw KPMG, and ourselves were very shocked that they even have offices that side. Now, if the report or the study by KPMG is not talking to what I expected or what I wish, I don't think that we must shut down such companies and be mean, you know, about their presentations and what the department has done thus far. On your slide, you made a presentation on the program management systems. Now, I want the department chair to explain the involvement of Treasury on that. Was Treasury involved in appointing such important systems? Because program management systems for nuclear is one important aspect in the entire nuclear build program. Was it necessary for the department to have such systems, and to what end are they going to assist the nuclear build program moving forward? I think those are important for me to know before I suffer from this obsession about Jacob Zuma and the friends and so on and so forth. I must have information so that I am able to articulate when people ask me about these things. Information is power. Now, in terms of the 30 days, section 30, the 39th chair of the PFMA as per the debate in the House. I forget what section is it. The minister in the presidency, when he was debating on this matter, he made a point that in the PFMA, there's a section that says that an accounting officer can be held liable under law if there's a failure to adhere to this 30-day payment of service providers. Now, I want to support what Utatu Mabunda has asked earlier. Have you adhered to the PFMA? Is there a company that we should know of that you have not paid until to date? And what are the reasons to that effect, if there is any? Because we don't want to read about things on newspapers. So it's better if you are reactive. I mean, if you are proactive than being reactive. We don't want to be led by newspapers as a committee and then come here and raise things that are in newspapers when you, as officials, are here to empower us about things that are to be exposed and so on and so forth. So, Chair, those are the issues which I thought it's important for us to know. Myself, as a member of the committee, I'm not interested in internal procurement processes of the department because it's not my responsibility. My responsibility is doing oversight and on certain things, but internal procurement, I've never, in fact, I must applaud South Africa. South Africa is the most democratic country I've ever seen. I've never seen any country in the world where procurement processes on this particular issue, in particular nuclear, tabled in any parliament. I must applaud South Africa. South Africa is a very much democratic country. All of us, we must be grateful to be South Africans. Otherwise, in other parts of the world, you would have never have this kind of a session. Chairperson, thank you very much to you also for being so considerate and be a Democrat representing your organization. And one last question to you. Coming here to present all what you have presented, what are the implications? Is this going to help the processes of the procurement of the nuclear belt moving forward? What are the markets going to say about this? Is it not going to affect the processes of the vendor companies that visited our country at some point? Because I know they were visited by vendor countries and countries that are interested on this particular project that we are talking about today. So we really need to understand the implications of you coming here and presenting this information to the competitors as well. Remember, South Africa is a competitive country in terms of business and so on and so forth. We allow that competition. Now, I want to understand the implications of you coming here presenting all these procurement frameworks and so on. It's a very nice information for whose benefit. So I really need to understand those things before we could say you bring more, because I know this will have implications as we move forward. Business Day will write about this. I know they always write about our committees, whether it's positive or negative writing, but they do write about our committees and the reaction out there. Sometimes it gets very negative and sometimes less positive. So I really need to understand, but from where? What is it that we need to expect? Thank you.
I'm going to take responses. Honorable Makai. you said you will come during follow-up questions, so I'll give you time at that point. A sort of what? Honorable Makai, it's unfair. I'll come back to you. Okay, thanks very much. You, honorable member, you're quite right. So these are not easy matters. So you can respond to the questions.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for the constructive questions. We plan to deal with the questions quite thoroughly. We've identified these different team members that would contribute. Chairperson, with your indulgence, I request that I call them upon to also then make a contribution. Thank you. The Honourable Member, Mahamehlala, is raising an important question as to what is the implication for the department for presenting this work. We think it's important. We've been called by the committee to come and account, and we then have to account on the work that has been done. But we think also it's important to indicate that as the department, we're doing the work that seek to create a framework for procurement, a framework for policy setting for the rolling out of the program. Now, what then becomes important is that such kind of work is by its very nature confidential, because we are dealing with the work that informs the government policy on certain matters and how certain matters will then unfold going forward. And the Honorable Member was asking what the implication is. The implication, as we would see, these studies are confidential, and what the implication is that it impact on the government bargaining position when it comes to the procurement, because we have now discussed what the recommendations of the studies were. When government has to make its own decisions on the procurement, this information is now out in the public, so it gives a competitive advantage to the prospective bidders. In terms of understanding what is in the government's mind, what sort of studies the government has commissioned, what sort of recommendations are coming out, and if government proceeds in this basis to use such recommendations in its policy formulation, in its laying out of the framework, already the bargaining competitive advantage of government is already been laid out in the public domain. So that's the implication as far as we could see it. We would have wished that this be discussed in a more confidential manner so that it then protect that competitive bargaining process for government when it comes to the procurement at a later stage. Because what then happens is that there's an understanding of what the government policy formulation may come out to be based on the recommendations, and that's what we see as the implication, Honorable Members. However, we have been called to come and account to the committee to make sure that we can provide information and for its transparency of the information. So that's how we see it, Honorable Member. As the implication, obviously, that's what we see as the implication, because it's confidential information. It helps to inform the government formulation of policy formulation of a strategic direction of how the program is being rolled out. In the main, it constitutes the business case of the nuclear new build program. So there is that risk that we are foreseeing. Then, on the other question that was then raised, the honorable member raised the question about what is the benefit of this program to the South Africans. I'm going to request Honorable Chairperson to deal with that question. We have commissioned strategies as a department and the interdepartmental team that indicate that there is a huge potential for job creation on this program for South Africa. We're talking more than 200,000 jobs that will be created. And also it is important to highlight that nuclear by its very nature create a highly professional advanced job, and these jobs have got a multiplier effect, so that if you appoint one professional engineer, that engineer by the work that he does and the spending that he does create multiple other jobs that are linked to that. And also then the industry that will be created, because the government is going to use nuclear to create a full value chain for peaceful use. So there will be a stimulation of the job created in the mining industry. There will be a stimulation of jobs in the manufacturing industry. There will be stimulation of jobs in the research and development industry, in the power generation industry, that means electricity, in the management of the radioactive waste industry, in the education sector, in the small business sector, because during construction there will be thousands of jobs that will be created out of this job. So there's a huge potential for this job. And also then recognizing that the recommendation is that in order to stimulate this economy through the nuclear new build industry, we need to localize up to the extent of 80% localization of the program. So this is a clear evidence that the nuclear new build is geared towards ensuring that lots of jobs are localized. We stimulate the industry, the whole input material that will be required for the construction and the manufacturing of the nuclear new build nuclear power station has to be made here in South Africa. So what the government is looking at is that the industries that will be creating the value for the program should not be in the prospective bidder countries. They should also come and create factories here in South Africa, so that the manufacturing has to happen here in South Africa to create jobs here in South Africa. With your indulgence, Chairperson, if you could allow me, I just also like to request the CEO of NEXA, because NEXA is quite an important SOE in the energy sector, to also contribute to the potential for job creation in the nuclear new build sector. Thank you.
Is that all you want to respond to? I want to, can you respond to all the questions you want to respond to? So I don't want to be moving.
The other questions, Chairperson, I will then request the team to also contribute. All the questions that were related to the procurement, what sort of committees and notices, and whether...
No, that's fine. All I'm saying is each one of you must answer all their questions. So don't answer one question and then come back.
Yeah.
So I'm saying don't answer questions in the order in which they were asked. Answer all the questions that you want to answer yourself as the DDG, and then the rest must do the same. So, because I don't want to be going backwards and forwards. are all those your questions you want to respond?
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, thank you.
Continue.
Then on the one for localization, I also request that the CEO of NERCSA make a contribution. And on the question related to the procurement, the whether we pay the services, whether they all been paid, I'm going to request our CFO to also make a contribution. On the questions around the program management system, the value that the department is deriving out of the system going forward and the rationale, I'm going to request our nuclear procurement specialist, Mr. Ngwane, also to make a contribution. Thank you, Chairperson. We'll tackle the questions in that manner.
Mr. Tsila.
Thanks, Chair and honorable members. In terms of localization, it's a truism to indicate that as we dig holes and we move concrete around and we build fences, we strengthen roads, we will be using South Africans. The bulldozers, the concrete supply, the supply of foodstuffs will indeed be by South Africans as we construct the nuclear power plants, the fuel cycle manufacturing of fuel, the conversion facility, even constructing the back end of the nuclear fuel cycle. We will use predominantly South African skills. These skills are available. They are available in components for every part of the value chain today. We just don't have them in enough numbers. What we indeed intend doing, and we are doing already, is we're training up young South Africans and not so young South Africans within the country, outside the country, in China, in Korea, in Russia. We're training them to take up this mammoth task that will be involved in. To the extent that we're looking at the work in terms of manufacturing, NERCSA as an entity has prepared itself to be able to lead the manufacturing in terms of enterprise development. There I mean, Chair, that the program will be identifying small, medium enterprises that will do supply of services and equipment and components into the build program. That process will be done in conjunction with our partner, who will be the vendor that will be selecting through the request for proposal process. That is indeed, Chair, how we intend doing it. And we will continue to communicate and to indicate how we're going to be doing this in the most detail. But this will involve not only the construction of nuclear power plants, it will involve mining, it will involve beneficiation of uranium, it will involve beneficiation of fluorspar, which is calcium fluoride, which we have in abundance in the country. As we do this work, we shall involve young and not so young South Africans from the local areas. For example, when the power plant is being built in the Eastern Cape in Tashpent, we will use the people in Tashpent around the area in which we'll be working, as well as other people from elsewhere in the country, because the skills distribution in South Africa is not even. It's not homogenous. Some areas have more skills than others, but we shall be endeavoring to build the skills where it is required, Chair. I will stop there, Chair.
The honourable members there are complaining about what not so young means. Young, we understand. Not so young, we don't understand what that means.
Just to clarify, Chair, people that are not so young look like me, Chair.
I did say that NEXA is going to have to prepare itself and its role. Some of the things they're explaining now, they'll have to come back to the committee to explain what their current role is and what their envisaged role is going to be in the new build. So we will call them back. So the next one is the CFO.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I'll respond to the first one by Honourable McKay. The department does follow appropriate procurement processes. It's depending on the circumstances of that procurement or what's being procured. One such example would be the program management system. It was, as per Treasury Regulation 16A 6.6, an accounting officer may, on behalf of the department, participate in a contract arranged by means of a competitive bidding process with the approval of that organ of state, and that approval was received. And the document...
Sorry, just repeat that.
For the program management system, section 16A 6.6 was utilized. An accounting officer may, on behalf of the department, participate in any contract arranged by means of a competitive bidding process with the permission of that organ of state, and the department did receive that approval. All supporting documents in terms of minutes, procurement notices, or even reasons for deviation are available from the department, and we do maintain those records. Chair, there was another question on the BE status of our bidders. Yes, I would like to confirm the department does evaluate bids on the technical specifications, the BE status of the company, and price. So those things are considered. Another question was raised on the payment of service providers within 30 days. Every effort is made by the department to pay service providers within 30 days. However, Chair, there has to be an element of prudence as well. The deliverables of, as per the contract that we sign, has to be verified. And the project managers do verify, and the approval process is followed. Once we are satisfied that the deliverables have been received, payments do proceed. If there are any delays internally, the project managers, and in this case the DDG, would be informed, and even the accounting officer, and where appropriate, we also inform the service providers. So every effort is made to pay within 30 days. But if there are delays, we do communicate internally as well. I think that was all the questions for me, Chair. Thank you.
Are you sure?
When you say short, Chair, are you referring to the process that we follow?
No, I was short. You're done with all the questions. That's financially related questions. Okay, there will be follow-up questions. Mr. Mbabu, who's next?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also request that we have Mr. Ngwane, our nuclear procurement specialist, to also provide some input around the program management system, how we see it, its value currently, and the value going forward to the program. And also, Chairperson, there were also other questions that were raised by Honourable Member McKay that we would also like to request that we also provide input around the AP, the cost of nuclear that was provided by the NGRO. I would request that we ask our nuclear technology specialist, Mr. Kesho, also to provide input onto that one.
Mr. Ngwane.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, thank you. I'll specifically respond to the questions raised around the program management system. And I think specifically the question whether there was a need to procure the system, and secondly, whether the system is still required, considering that the roles of the different stakeholders, ESCOM, NEXA, and the department have been redefined in line with the approvals by Cabinet that ESCOM will be the owner, operator, and procurer of the nuclear power plants. NEXA will be the procurer, owner, and operator of the fuel cycle facilities and the multipurpose reactor, and that the department will then be a policy and program coordinator. First of all, Chair and Honourable Members, the need for the system was identified by the department in 2015. And the department started a process of identifying a system that could assist the department to effectively and efficiently administer, manage, and coordinate the nuclear new build program. And as the CFO has mentioned, the program was then procured through a specific Treasury regulation, which you referred to earlier, which is in line with the prescripts. The relevant approvals were obtained by the department. But the need for the system was that there were various reasons why the system had to be procured. First of all, which was key, was that there was a lot of information which was lying in various institutions and various departments and various offices that relates to the program. And there was a need to make sure that there is a single information repository within the department to ensure that every single piece of information relating to the program can be found and searched for through one system within the department. And this makes it easier for processing of information, for distribution of information, and for reference purposes, the system is going to make it easier. Secondly, the department, its initial role, prior to the current role, was going to be the procuring agency. And therefore, the department needed to do preparatory work for the actual procurement. And that preparatory work involved a number of activities. First of all, there's a number of stakeholders that are involved and a number of program structures that are involved in the program. DOE, DPE, Department of Trade and Industry, Science and Technology, National Treasury, ESCOM, NEXA, and RADI, and various other stakeholders that are involved in the program itself, and therefore there is a need for coordination of all these stakeholders and activities that are taking place within the different stakeholders. And there was therefore a need to make sure that there is a system where all the information is able to be coordinated, processed, and managed and distributed to the relevant stakeholders as and when required. But again, in terms of the procurement processes are very much prescriptive in a sense that if you operate in a procurement environment within government, you are guided by the Constitution, the PFMA, Treasury regulations, and other relevant prescripts. And therefore, we needed to ensure that the processing or the procurement processes themselves take place within a secured environment. First of all, the security of information was key. Secondly, the evaluation and adjudication processes. Currently, these processes are manual, or before the system, the procurement of the system within the department, these processes are predominantly manual systems where specific evaluation processes, evaluation forms, score sheets are processed manually by the relevant bid committee structures during evaluation and adjudication processes. What the program wanted to do to ensure that the integrity of the procurement process the evaluation and adjudication is not compromised was that these processes are automated. So that when the request for proposals is issued, the notices are issued both manually and electronically, particularly in view of the fact that many of the stakeholders are likely to be international stakeholders that would be interested in submitting proposals for the program. Again, we wanted a very secured environment that would have computers inside with all the submissions already programmed into the system so that any member of the BEAT structures, be it the evaluation or adjudication committees, when they come through, all documents that they require are already in the system and their scores to avoid any interference with scores. All of this information is captured into the system to avoid any changes that BEAT committee members may want to effect after realizing which way the scores would be going. And therefore, the whole point was to make sure that there is clear protection of information and that the procurement process is not compromised in any way through evaluation and adjudication processes. But I also want to speak to the role of the department after the roles have been defined, now the department being the policy and program coordinator. I think the various roles that the department will play within the coordination and policy coordination and program management. First of all, the department will still be involved in the procurement, but the department would not be hands-on in terms of the procurement process, but the department will coordinate the procurement process because of the various stakeholders that are directly procuring. The department's role would be to coordinate the procurement process, but would not be involved in the bid committee structures and the actual processing of the proposals. But the role that the department is envisaged to play is to provide an advisory role in terms of the procurement process, is to ensure that there is compliance with the legislative prescripts relating to procurement, and thirdly, to ensure that at every stage of the procurement process, there is a review element, and there is an independent review element. And this is where the department comes in to make sure that there is an independent review after the procurers have processed the proposals that have come through. That review happens and will be done, performed by the department. Again, when we look into the future, the department and all the other stakeholders are currently developing and consulting on a governance framework to clearly define in detail the different roles and responsibilities of all the stakeholders in relation to the policy oversight, in relation to management of the program, in relation to the procurement itself. And once this has been agreed to, we will definitely be updating the committee in terms of what different roles the department and the other stakeholders will be playing in relation to that. Again, the system was required to ensure that beyond procurement, when there is implementation of the different projects within the program itself, there's adequate monitoring and evaluation of what happens on the ground. And if you look at the various institutions that are involved, each one of them will obviously have their own internal systems that they use for management, for processing information, and for reporting purposes. And therefore, you needed to make sure that all of that information is fed into one single system that is able to then assist management and assist government to monitor and evaluate progress in terms of implementation on the ground, also to monitor adherence to specified or agreed timelines with the service providers. But also importantly, in the beginning, there's an element of empowerment within the program itself to an extent that the department has approached National Treasury to obtain certain exemptions from certain legislative provisions relating to empowerment. And the department has also developed a draft economic development policy to make sure that it supplements those specific provisions that it has requested exemptions for. And therefore, there would be a need to make sure that the empowerment targets, the empowerment objectives that are defined in the economic development policy are monitored continuously to make sure that at the beginning, when the preferred service provider submitted their bid, they committed to specific empowerment targets. Those targets are continuously assessed, are continuously monitored, and the system is one tool that is going to assist us to make sure that we monitor and evaluate implementation, time schedules, and empowerment targets. And there's another key element of reporting. There's obviously two forms of reporting in relation to the program. We'd get management reporting, which would be necessary for internal reporting and amongst the stakeholders. And there's also statutory reporting, and part of the of that reporting is coming to this committee and report on the progress on the implementation of the program itself. And therefore, the program management system will play a key role in providing real-time information that will be fed through the different reporting structures that I've just mentioned to make sure that information is available on time and information is provided adequately. And this will help also with management decisions, that management is able to take decisions timelessly, particularly relating to specific schedules on the implementation itself.
Okay, Mr. Mwani.
I would like to end it there. And I think in terms of the procurement of the system itself, I think the CFO has already addressed that. Thank you.
Is that all?
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a matter relating to LP. That we just needed to provide also input that was raised by the Honourable Member McKay. So I have got our nuclear technology specialist, Mr. Jitesh Kesho, who is going to also then provide clarity on that matter, to say is it a Western technology, a cost that was considered by EPRI, or is it not, why the study that we conducted, and also then be able to provide a balanced view on the matter. Thank you, Mr. Kesho.
Sorry, Chair. Point of clarity. We have two new speakers addressing us today. Could they please clarify their names in full, just so that we have them on the record, and how they're associated with the department, either as employees or as consultants?
Which speakers?
That's just finished, and the speaker that's about to address us, Chair.
Oh, okay. Please clarify that, Mr. Mbambo.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The speaker that has just spoken is Mr. Ngwane, is our nuclear procurement specialist. And the other speaker that has spoken is Mr. Goodluck Tselane. He is the CEO of the South African Nuclear Energy Corporation. And what we are requesting now is Mr. Jitesh Kesho, who is the nuclear technology specialist for the Department of Energy. Thank you.
Okay, so that's clear. I didn't know the name Goodluck. please go ahead.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, CEOs, all protocol observed. Honorable Chair, I'd just like to indicate that I'm not new to this committee. I have presented, I've been with the department since 2010, and I have spoken at this committee before. I understand, Chair. Chair, the issue about the cost of nuclear, I find a very interesting one, and I would like to just recapture the words stated. It's stated that the cost of nuclear of 4918 is extremely low, and no other cost study has shown such a low value. This is from Honorable McKay. Also stated was that the EPRI is an internationally recognized and reputable company, and the values carry more integrity than the INGEROP study that the department has conducted. Honorable Chair, on page 29 of the EPRI report of 2010, which was used as input to the IRP, I want to express to you the value there for the cost, the most expensive value for nuclear there. I just want to see my laptop. It's 32,440 rands per kilowatt electric. I'll do the conversion of using the exchange rate of the day. It comes to $4,383 per kilowatt electric. which is at least $500 less than the EPRI study. Chair, if we were to use this value in the IRP as recommended and stated that EPRI is an international body that is more recognized than INGEROC, we would have far more nuclear in the IRP than we have today. Chair, I think as a civil servant, we do our best to do what's in the integrity and to the benefit of the country. And underestimating and making statements that do not reflect this is greatly offensive to me. On the issue about Western versus others, the EPRI report only looked at two technologies, mainly Areva and Westinghouse. We felt that there's a lot of other reactors in the world, and we considered 30 projects that were under construction or in the process of conclusion of procurement. This is a more broader study, and we believe that the values we received were a statistical analysis of data from other reports, including the EPRI report, the OECD report, the BP report, and a whole lot of others. I'm sure this report has been made available for members to scrutinize and examine, and I'd appreciate if there are deficiencies that are identified in this report to be shared with the department so we could improve our work going forward. I think I've answered the question, Chair, and I apologize for going off the topic, but thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much. Thanks very much for the surprise. Is there something more? Dr. Kim, I've seen your hand. Is there something more?
Thank you, Chairperson. There is an issue that was raised by the Honourable Member McKay around the declarations for the department officials, and I'd like to just request the CFO if the CFO can deal with that matter, and if you allow, Chairperson.
CFO?
Thank you, Chair. The declarations are normally done once a year through the HR process, and to the best of my knowledge, all DDGs have declared, but I don't have the copies with me, unfortunately, Chair. Thank you.
Dr. Kim?
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members. I'd like to make a couple of appeals here. Firstly, I'd like to appeal to members of the public, the press, to please assume good faith on the part of the nuclear professionals of this country. Mr. Kershaw has just said exactly that. I'm a nuclear scientist, South African trained, and I'm proud of it. I have never in my life been in any formal or informal meeting of South African nuclear scientists who've sat down and deliberately tried to contrive numbers to fool anybody. We always try our very best to be totally accurate, and believe me, there's very much mutual policing. If somebody steps out of line, the others jump on the person immediately. We are trying our very best to be accurate. It's a matter of professional pride to give the right answers. So when we hear from members sweeping statements like nuclear is 1 rand 20 a kilowatt hour, 1 rand 50, and numbers calculated by the professionals just don't count, that's painful. Northwest University has done serious calculations on this, so has Eskom. All of those people have tried their very best to get accurate answers. I believe those answers, my colleagues believe those answers. Statements like 98% of all nuclear build has cost overruns is also just not true. I would like to inform people that South Africans built Coburg, and we built Coburg 40 years ago on time and on budget. Now, why can't we do it again? We did it once before. Now, when I say South Africans built Coburg, it was a French-designed reactor. But if you walked around that site, you would have found, I wasn't there, it was a bit before my time, you would have battled to find a non-South African face there. As Mr. Chalani has already mentioned, you'll find South Africans driving the bulldozers, digging the holes, laying the cables, pouring the concrete, putting in the control rooms, just about everything. So there's a massive amount of opportunity for South Africans to do this. Now, I regularly hear the statement that you cannot look at the cost of Coburg now because Coburg was built 40 years ago. Quite frankly, Chair, it is a silly comment. It comes up time and time again in the newspapers. I personally have time and time again made comment about it. It shows that the member concerned doesn't understand. The point of nuclear is that nuclear has a very low fuel price over a long period of time. A nuclear reactor today is built to last 60 years. When you build the reactor, the front-end capital cost costs more than something like a coal-fired power station. But you really benefit from the fuel because the fuel is so incredibly cheap, stable, reliable for so long. People are familiar with the term kilojoules of energy in your cornflakes and such like. There's about 20 kilojoules of energy in sugar, 50 kilojoules in coal, and 76 million kilojoules in uranium. The total fuel for Coburg for 20 years will fit in this room. Believe me, the coal for 20 years for a coal-fired power station would bury this entire building. So once you have taken the decision to build a nuclear power plant, you take a 60-year cycle decision. We are now with Coburg benefiting from the wisdom of over 40 years ago when the decision was made to put Coburg on the map. So to say you've now got to discount the fact that as of today, I believe from Eskom figures, Coburg is producing electricity at 28 cents, that we now have to benefit from that and not make these comments that you've got to discount because it's paid for. It's like saying that you buy a house on a bond and when your bond's paid off, you can no longer count the figure that you pay per month to stay there because the house is paid for. That's why you did it. And that's why we're trying to do it with nuclear. And why, as Mr. Mbambo said earlier, the approach has been to go for a program and not for a project. Once you start a program of something like 6 to 9 reactors that would be on 3 total power stations of 2 to 3 reactors per power station, as you start, the people that you train are rolled over to the next one and what you learnt is rolled over to the next one and you have the larger scale that you benefit from. So somebody asked, what are the benefits of nuclear over and above electricity? Firstly, it's the electricity, and one cannot overemphasize the baseload. In the case of nuclear power, you get a load factor of 90%. That means how much of the theoretical maximum of electricity do you get? Nuclear is 90%. 90% of the time, you're getting the total amount of power that the plant can produce. The other 10% is very known because that's when you switch it off for refueling or for maintenance, and that you know months or years in advance, the dates virtually to the day. In the case of Coburg, we know 1.5 years in advance the day on which we're going to switch the reactor off for refueling. In the case of something like wind, it's built for about a 30% load factor. In reality, you get half. Solar's 20%, and you don't always get that because the clouds come past. So the thing is, with the nuclear, you know the powers there. You can drive electric trains on it. You can drive the mines on it and so on. But over and above that, other potentials, for example, in a nuclear power plant is desalination. We've heard a lot about the water problem for some time now. People say stop the leaks of your taps and so on. That is not a long-term solution. South Africa wants to be able to double the water consumption of the country. There's no way twice as much rain is ever going to fall in the future. We're at the end of the road. There's not much damming opportunity left and so on. If you really want to pump large-scale water inland to ensure that the mealies don't go dry and so on, something like nuclear power plants can desalinate the water, and these types of nuclear power plants are perfect for that. They're ideal. Then there's the training. Nuclear is very similar in many respects to coal-fired power. They've got turbines and generators and so on, so most of it is very similar. But the specifications tend to be that much more stringent. So there's job opportunities
to be created. When people are trained to nuclear spec, they can move sideways into any other business and they're available. That's why there's so much job creation. And finally, the figure of $4,800 approximately dollars per kilowatt hour is totally reasonable. I agree entirely with what Mr. Kershaw said. It's a figure that we can work with. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Dr. Ken? You'll be coming back here to repeat this. And we're going to call other nuclear experts that differ with you here to Parliament so we can have this conversation. So, Mr. Kesh, what's your first name?
Jidesh.
Yeah, okay. Kesho. Don't feel offended. From time to time, we're going to ruffle your feathers here in Parliament, so don't feel offended. I'm touched, however, by the fact that you say, as a public servant, as a disciplined public servant, you seek to do your work at all times, professionally and with integrity. I wish all public servants can do that. That's highly appreciated. Can we have a quick follow-up questions, honourable members, and then we'll allow the department and the other team members to respond quickly so that we can try and make sure that we finish by 1 o'clock. Honourable Matlala, you want to advise? Please,
Thank you, Chair. My questions are not answered. I asked several questions and they are not answered.
Oh, you can't write. You can't write.
To answer such questions, those questions that were posed to him. Thank you.
You're quite right. I'm not looking at my list as they respond, but you're quite right. You remember the questions that the Honourable Matlala posed. Can you please respond to those?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Apologies to the Honourable Member. I remember the question where one of them was saying, did all the companies that were appointed comply with the South African requirements? And from the response we received from the CFO, the answer is yes. We go through a procurement process that makes sure that we screen all the companies that participate in the companies bidding processes to make sure that these comply with the South African legislation, the PFMA, the policies. And the other mentor was whether with these South African companies, also the question was whether were they appointing young people. And we need to indicate that some of these companies, they are international companies, but they are also locally based. Like if you look into the KPMGs, the Deloitte, and all of these, they've got a footprint internationally. And nuclear, by its very nature, it's a very international technology, and one then finds that to get the professional players in the field, one has to go quite extensively and look in the country and also elsewhere. But we've sourced them based on South African offices because they've got a footprint here in South Africa. And then the question was whether these companies appointed the young professionals. Those matters the CFO dealt with to say we'll look into these companies to assess them in terms of their BEE status, and those were found to have been in line. In terms of the age range of their employees, I would not be in a position to clearly provide an answer as to how young their professionals are that were executing this work. However, I would want to provide a comfort to the honourable members, as already been indicated by the chief executive of NEXA, that as our own South African state-owned entities, the drive is to make sure that we recruit as much young professionals that are coming through in the field to contribute into this work. Then there was a question around the one of the ownership scenario that was presented in the slide that called, that talks about SANJIF, South African Nuclear Joint Venture Organization. It is one of the scenarios that was assessed by the study that we've undertook for the owner, operator, and the financing structure. And it was looking to see whether can South Africa, for the nuclear new build, form a South African joint venture that is going to execute the nuclear new build program, and also into that joint venture bring in Quebec as the South African equity into when we're going through the procurement. And one of the risks that were mentioned there was that it will take a longer process to form such a joint venture and also bring in Quebec as part of the government equity into the program because of issues that are related to ESCOM financials, the issues that are related to the value that Quebec provides. So it's one of the options that has been explored, that has been provided what the risk will be if that option were to be taken forward. And it's important to highlight that all of the options here that we've talked about, they're still open for further work because we have not started the procurement. But at the very least, we got a recommendation that says the optimal ways in which the utility can be structured for the program. It can either be through what we call the business as usual. That means you have the ESCOM ownership 100% without attracting the equity from the private investors. And then the other scenario was that one of a joint venture wherein you will have ESCOM taking the majority shareholder, but also then attracting the equity from the private investors. That's also an option that's still open. Then the other option was that one of a special purpose vehicle to be formed specifically for undertaking the project. That's also the option that still needs to be explored, which is why we've indicated that we view these studies as much more strategic in nature, that they reveal what is the government's thinking around the program and what are the possible options that the government is thinking of executing the program. And these options will then be finally tested when we receive the market response after we have issued the RFP. And so discussing them now already give out what is the government's thinking going forward and what the possibilities are. Then there was a question, why does the NGROP study on cost indicate that other studies were limited? And I think Mr. Keshaw has provided the answer in that respect, because the NGROP study was, in our view, quite a comprehensive study that looks into the balance of the Western technologies as well as the Eastern technologies.
Okay.
So that has been,
we won't be able to have follow-up questions at this rate. Please.
Thank you, Jefferson. I hope I have addressed all the questions from the
Honourable. Yeah, from the Honourable Matlala you have. Yeah, thanks very much. Please, we Honourable Members, we've got to be quick now. We don't have enough time. Can we please focus on the raised questions that are dealing with the presentation that we received? The other broader questions we're coming back to. I've already indicated that we'll get Nexa, ESCOM, DOE here to have to continue this conversation. Honorable Makai.
Chair, I'd just like to raise four distinct points. First of all, Chair, I must say I find it offensive when officials are whining that we need to take them at face value and trust them. In a state that has been captured as extensively as the South African state is, our job is not to take them at face value. It is to be skeptical. They can't handle the skepticism. They should perhaps look for another job. Chair, in terms of the actual figure that I was quoting earlier in which I was stated as being
Honorable Makai, this is not fair. I don't mind. Well, you see, when the minister is here or deputy minister next time, we can do that. It's unfair to be doing this to the officials because they're not politicians like you. They can't protect themselves here. It's not fair. Please ask your question.
Just in terms of the comments of mine making broad statements around nuclear, I'm quoting a 2014 study that studied between 1936 and 2014, 57 different countries, in which they assessed 180 different nuclear new build programs, in which they found 92.2% of them had cost overruns of an average time of 64 months with an average cost escalation of 117%. So I'm not making figures up, Chair. That is an independent study done by individuals who are not in the nuclear field, who have nothing to benefit from purchasing reactors, who actually found independently over 60 years that was their finding. So be careful, Chair, before accusing honourable members of making broad statements, which are actually founded in, if they want to go and look at the source data, it's in the Parliamentary Budget Office report done on the cost of nuclear submitted to this committee not only 2 months ago. Chair, with regards to the financial scenarios that were presented, I think we have to be very circumspect about what's being presented to us. First of all, we're aware that Eskom is already facing a downgrade or has faced a downgrade by certain of the agencies. So, for example, that there's a scenario that has a 99% gearing ratio as an actual scenario, Chair, is fundamentally laughable. And it's laughable for multiple reasons. The first one is the fact of the matter is that neither Eskom's balance sheet nor the South African sovereign balance sheet could actually withstand a gearing of 99% for a nuclear deal. It's just not possible in terms of the ratios. It throws out your debt-to-equity ratios. It throws out your revenue ratios. And, Chair, all that does is actually lead to further downgrades, both for South Africa and for Eskom. So having a scenario in which you're essentially pushing for further downgrade out of a gearing of 99% kind of says to us that this scenario is utter nonsense and actually can't be considered, and what they're presenting is nonsense. So it's one of the key issues, Chair, that gearing, anyone who's in the finance world will tell you that possibility of a 99% gearing ratio is highly, highly, highly implausible as a scenario for funding nuclear. Chair, also, if you look at the levelized costs which were presented across the way, the levelized costs are virtually identical, which is very strange when you consider that there's a different gearing across the different scenarios. The more you borrow, you'd expect more of the servicing costs to kind of pay off that debt, and therefore you'd expect variations in the levelized costs. So the fact that the levelized costs are so close kind of tells us again that these scenarios are, at best, a little bit fishy. It must be interrogated. We must look at the assumptions that, again, at face value, this scenario is also possibly implausible. Chair, also what's not explained is the ECA, the Export Credit Agency. I mean, what will be used as the ECA? Will it be, who will be the vendor, what types of loans, what types of financing costs, what kind of guarantees will be required, will they be conditionalities, will they be political, or will they be economic, what is the expected cost around financing? Chair, the scenarios as presented here, without clear indication or explanation of their underlying assumptions, kind of says to us that this is an ad hoc job and we can't actually take the scenarios that were presented to us at face value, and I would say you can't even really take them seriously. I'm not a finance expert, but I'm telling you people who would look at this would have significant questions around what is being presented as its credibility and validity in terms of the kind of situation South Africa really faces in terms of its sovereign downgrade. Chair, the questions that weren't answered that I did ask were specifically to do with the contracts and the tender around which body in the Free State issued the original tender document. Why did the department choose to deviate? Why did the department piggyback on the back of that? That was not answered by either of the people who responded to my question. And Chair, I must ask, in terms of the response that we got on the procurement system, it sounds like the procurement system would be far more at home in Eskom. And fundamentally, Chair, my argument would be that Eskom should pay the department for it. It's a waste of money from the department side. There's no clear governance structure around what the department will be doing. The response we got was, well, we'll potentially be doing the following with this management system. But fundamentally, I doubt Eskom is going to want to have too much involvement, direct involvement by the department in some of those things. Finally, Chair, I just want to ask, we are talking about issuing RFPs. Last week, the department issued an IRP plan which clearly indicated that base load nuclear could wait. So that debate hasn't even finished. That debate hasn't even gone through public consideration, hasn't even been approved by Parliament yet, and we're talking about issuing RFPs. It's like getting, I always get this analogy wrong, the donkey before the cart or the cart before the donkey, whichever the one is the right one. How can you be issuing RFPs, and what in terms of you're issuing an RFP?
I got the question, Honourable Makai.
Which one are we issuing in terms of? Thank you, Chair.
I got the question. Don't answer that question. I know you don't have an answer to that question. I'm calling the next meeting to deal with this thing precisely because of the questions you're asking. That we must return to. We're dealing with contracts, honorable members. You said you want contracts. And I suppose because you're playing an oversight role, you wanted to see. Have processes been followed in terms of the law, in terms of the regulations? We want to satisfy ourselves in relation to that, and we can move on. The rest of the other bigger questions, we'll return to them. So can we go one step at a time and not mix the focus of what we're trying to do with the other things that can come later on. Honourable Mohamed Salah, and hopefully that's the last question, and that we can try and close.
By the way, the CFO answered the question on this obsession of the systems. She was very eloquent in answering. She even said that documents are available for people to see in the minutes and so on and so forth. Chair, we'll sit here until discuss the issue of the nuclear as if it's the issue of interest to some, when it's in actual fact not even an issue. The issue here is very clear that you can't have this government at the helm of the nuclear power station or nuclear build program, because those who were there 50 years ago were better placed for the Quebec, and so on and so on and so forth. That's what we are dealing with here. We are dealing with politics and political footballing by these other ones who are anti-nuclear. On that note, Chair, and anti-ruling party, on that note, Chair, I think that as a committee with the department, we need to facilitate a process where we are going to have a panel discussion on this particular issue so that we lay it into rest. Bring all the bright minds and people who are better placed to speak on this particular issue and leave reverence for the churches and so on and positions for politics, and have academia and those NGOs that are anti and pro-nuclear in a panel discussion. Probably that should be our program as a committee, first thing when we come back to Parliament next year, so that we don't deal with unfounded lies and baseless facts here as a committee moving forward. Otherwise, we'll discuss the issue of nuclear until dawn. Every time when the nuclear is about to kick off, when there's a progress on this particular issue of the nuclear build, we bring all these flimsy questions and so on and so forth. I think the approach now, let's go for a panel discussion as the committee. We facilitate it so that the scenarios are brought to us by the great minds on this particular field of nuclear or industry, so that all of us, we are empowered, because we are not empowered on this issue. We've never studied these things, some of us. Chair, the CEO of NEXTA is worrying me. When he says youth, young but not young, and he refers to him as young, I have a problem. Because the definition of youth in South Africa is 14 to 35. What he just said to the committee today is a clear definition of gatekeeping in this industry and less transfer of skills. Now, as South Africans, we will always cry, scarce skills, when there are people who are sitting with skills but denying to transfer the skills to the younger generation. When they retire, South Africa will suffer from these skills, and it's high time that you transfer these skills to the younger generation, so that when you retire as a country, we remain with the skills, so that ungahambi nazo ezi skills xa uretire, shushiye mhlekazi. Now, you can't define yourself as young, Chair. That thing is out of order. It should not be accepted moving forward. It can never be accepted. We are not going to speak again on these other things, which are sidelines, which are raised, but vilifying officials, it cannot be accepted. When the head of the department, which is the minister, you can throw all your hand grenades and bullets to that one so that she can respond to us as politicians. When we throw our hand grenades, probably she will bring her R5 or R1 and respond properly to us as politicians. Now, vilifying officials and undermining to a suspect they're bringing information here which is unverifiable. It can never be on, because we are talking about companies which are not there. We don't have the website and so on. But these companies are everywhere. On Facebook, they've got Facebook pages. They are there. It's not like when you Google these companies, you find that they died a natural death long time ago. Google is there for us to be empowered and get enough information on some of the things that we are not informed about. It's there. Now, it cannot be correct that we come here and bring all those unfounded lies and make them as if they are facts when they are not facts. So we must refrain from that as honorable members, so that we are able to have at least a constructive discussion and offer our constructive criticism to all the officials that come to our committee and present on their work as we are busy doing our oversight moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
I think we should try and wrap up. Let me say this. Honorable Mohammed Salah, now you are with me, you're moving in my direction. Yes. About the panel discussion of experts. Because it's not helpful for South Africa to have the kind of debate we're having at the moment. Of just throwing everything unsubstantiated at one another because we hold ideological positions on this matter. So let's come back. We will open for a panel of experts to do this. We'll have public hearings so that these NGOs, whether for or against, can come here, do their presentations. It can't be accepted that we cut our throats without substantiation in public. Let's come here to Parliament and deal with this matter. What I do know is that the government of the African National Congress will have no moral capacity to proceed if there's overwhelming evidence that shows that what we're trying to do is not in the interest of South Africa. It can't. Let's come back. Let's come here and have this discussion. I'm very sure about that. Those ones who don't believe, good luck. But I am sure about that myself. Let's come back here and have a proper conversation. It's not helpful, really. So let's have the experts come present. Dr. Kem, come back here. I'll get other experts who oppose you to come and debate with you in public. And then we can have the NGOs to come back and make their presentations. And then we'll have the Department of National Treasury to come here and tell us what they found and everybody else. So let's have the conversation and come back and say, Eskom, how are you going to do this with this kind of balance sheet that you have? They must answer the question. So let us not cut one another's throats when we have no facts. The issue of the cost will return to. So Honorable Mohammed Salah, unfortunately you were right. So we took an oath here to obey, respect and uphold the Constitution. So that's what we're going to do. So all information that is in the organs of the state will bring it here to Parliament so that it can be seen. You raise an important issue that Honorable Mr. Mbambo responded to about, so what happens if we put this information in the public, which may prejudice the position of South Africa. So what do we do if they are going to go into negotiations? I want all of us as South Africans to reflect on this, because we are all South Africans. So it's not hiding information, but we are South Africans. So if we are to protect the interests of the Republic, so what do we do when we have information in our hands that we're going to be engaging other countries around? So should we be exposing this information and disadvantage the Republic in its negotiation process? That question, I think we've got to return to. We have to be patriots. We've got to deal with that question. It's not a question of hiding information. The Constitution is very clear. All information Parliament requires must come here. But we have got to strike a balance as responsible South Africans. So this thing that people go around that we don't want to bring information here is not true. In fact, we have gone an extra mile to ensure that every information that is available is being brought here. So, experts, prepare yourselves to come back here. And then when we have listened to everybody, then the politicians can do the things they are good at. Those ones in the non-governmental organizations, we want to assure you, we want to have your submissions, and we want to have to hear you out on this matter. Hopefully, I was asking Secretary here to give us an indication of when we can do this. We'll have a discussion with the honorable members. We've got to prepare for this. It's got to be done. So let us not kill each other, South Africans, over this matter. Thank you very much. Honourable members, the Secretary wants to know if you can stay behind to look at the minutes. Please stay behind. We'll tell him if you want to look at the minutes or not.
Sorry, woman, please. Well, yeah, I know. Just tell me.
Yeah. Hello. Hi, how are you?
Hey, all right.
Hey, comrade. Everybody killed me for that.
Yeah.
When I return, I'm a cause. All right.
Guys, you can't
disturb here, no? Boshani. Ah, no, that's fine. Where is Zala? Where is Zala? Here in Parliament. No, but remember, okay, please, man, don't kill. No, but who's going ahead? It's not true. But you're going up.
Sorry, can I quickly look through your...
Hey, 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 h